This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Dear Colgate, I love that you love that I love being at home. You even let me whiten my teeth from home.
Because you know how I feel about getting up from my cloud couch.
The Colgate Optic White LED Kit gives professional level results in just 10 minutes a day for 10 days when used as directed.
And that's why, Colgate, I want you to meet my parents. Because ever since meeting you, I've been living life to the brightest. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hey Osiris listeners, we want to tell you about our friends at Sunset Lake CBD who support this show. Sunset Lake CBD is a Vermont hemp farm crafting affordable CBD products designed to help with sleep and stress without breaking the bank. If you haven't tried CBD before, take it from me, it's a game changer. I use Sunset Lake's tincture every night before I go to bed, helping me get solid, restful sleep. And their gummies are great for daytime. Check out their new Good Vibes gummies, which have just a bit of hemp-derived THC to help you relax and unwind. Sunset Lake CBD crafts products with hemp grown on their family farm and ships them directly to customers. They have tinctures, salves, edibles, coffee, smokables, and even pet products. By the way, their CBD chocolate fudge is awesome. Check them out today at sunsetlakecbd.com and use coupon code TIME for 20% off all products. Sunset Lake CBD. Farmer-owned, Vermont-grown.
Osiris.
Hey, Mike, I can't see clearly. Is that a lightning bolt on your shirt?
You're damn right it is, Oteil. This is Section 119. Hey, guys, we just got our hands on some great new gear from an officially licensed partner of the Grateful Dead, Section 119.
Oh, yeah, Section 119. They sent me a pair of board shorts. They're actually really cool. I actually wore them on stage, and they were really comfortable. You know, I live in board shorts in Florida, so that's kind of my jam. And these have a cool print on them. Bertha's on there and the roses and stuff. I really like them.
I got one of the performance polos with the Grateful Dead bolt embroidered in the chest. It's super stretchy, and I love the way it feels when I'm on stage wearing it. I feel like I'm representing the Dead and rocking out some jokes in style.
Section 119 was started by a couple of fans who wanted more than a latte to show their appreciation for the Grateful Dead. They started an apparel line that has everything you can imagine to represent the band at every occasion.
And not just the Dead, they've got some amazing fish duds as well. From button downs with dancing bears all over it to board shorts with super vibrant prints and donuts all over your shirts and socks. They've got something for every fan for any occasion.
If you're looking for more than a t-shirt to celebrate the Grateful Dead, the folks at Section 119 make the highest quality apparel.
Boogie on over to section119.com and use code COMESATIME. That's all one word, COMESATIME, for 15% off your next purchase.
Hey, this is Oteil. If you're liking what you're hearing, head on over to patreon.com/comesatimepod and get your bus pass for an extra episode every week.
Welcome back to another episode of my favorite podcast, Comes a Time, with Oteil Burbridge and me, Mike Fenoya.
My favorite podcast, too. I actually could say that because I've listened to a clip that Eric just made, just like to check it out. And I was laughing. I was like, I would sign up for this. I would definitely subscribe to this podcast. It was a good, nice job, Eric, on the 12-minute clip.
No better commercial, too, for a podcast. I mean, yeah, we would actually listen to it. It'd be weird if we were like, guys, this is the worst podcast. But.
Well, today we have drummer extraordinaire Nikki Glaspy. She is amazing. I met her when she was a teenager. She tells that story for us on the podcast. People on the jam band scene will know her from the group The Nth Power, and which was Nigel's first concert. And I have played many shows with them at New Orleans Jazz Fest and different places. And but she came out of Berkeley, she tells a great story about this too, about just intuition to just pack up and leave and go to New York when she had no money and no prospects. And she goes, and then she gets a gig with an all-girl band that Beyonce hired, and all of a sudden she's on this, you know, the biggest stages in the world. It's just a great story. And what she's done since then, to me, is the real story. She's just an incredible spirit, incredible intellect, just a great person. I don't know. This is one of my favorite podcasts.
No, that was, I could have listened to her for hours. Just the story. I love hearing anybody's story when they have that pivotal, like, do or die moment where it's like, I can't do this anymore. I need to follow something. There's something else out there for me and I have to do it. And she hit that multiple times. And it seems like there's probably more to come. So, I'm excited for all the listeners, because this was, and we, you know, I have to apologize to, I can't remember the name of the listener, but someone said, you need to check out this Living Myth podcast, Michael Mead, who hopefully we'll be having on sometime soon. But listening to that in Rough Times is giving me this kind of thought process about, like, okay, how do we take what we've already learned and use it in this, you know, plate of shit that we're living in now? So we got to talking with Nikki about that. And that I really loved, because it led the conversation in a really positive direction on how we need to look at the little things that happen and some of the most important moments she's had in her life and other. So I'm really stoked for the listeners to check her out, man. Check out the music's phenomenal, and they're on tour right now, and support them.
Yeah. And if you get to see her play drums, you're going to be. This one thing she did, I've told you about it last night, Michael, which they did the Parliament Funkadelic tribute with Dumpster Funk. It was at Spiritus Wani Music Park. And I had already seen her play. I'd already played with her. I knew how great she was.
Yeah.
And it just was such, she's such a force. She is such a force. And her force is super strong right now, the strongest it's ever been. We just had her teaching at Roots Rock Revival, our music camp up in the Catskills. And she just blasted us. So, she's tuned into that frequency that we're all about on this podcast. And she's dialed right in. So enjoy.
Yeah, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. And thank you, Nikki, for joining. And thank you to the Osiris Network for having us as part of the family. Go to osirispod.com and check out all the amazing other podcasts that are on the network. And also, of course, we are sponsored by the great Jerry Garcia. Garcia Handpicked Cannabis. If it's available in your area, I recommend it as much as I could. GarciaHandpicked.com, incredible product, incredible packaging, quality top to bottom. And check us out, speaking of quality top to bottom, Patreon.com/comesatimepod. Eric's over there working his wizardry, and we've got some amazing wormholes for you to hang out in, extra episode each week. And we've got some big plans for the listeners. Oteel's back from tour. He's got a new puppy. He's got all new energy in there. And we've got some great plans for you listeners. So stay tuned and enjoy and stay safe and stay happy if you can. Most importantly, right? Stay happy.
Nikki.
Yes.
So we were just talking about the Zoom world, and you were saying you do.
Yeah, I used to. I used to do like a Zoom. I guess you call it a webcast, right?
Sure.
And I did it every Monday with one of my best friends in the world, Caddy Rodriguez, and she was the tenor saxophone player in the Beyonce band.
Nice.
And we called it Strange Fruit. And the way that it started out was, yo, let's just like get online and talk about music and like, you know, give nuggets to, you know, people that are coming up and like trying to make it in the music business world and all of that stuff. And then George Floyd was killed, and then it completely took a left turn, you know, and became about social justice and really just kind of educating ourselves and other people at the same time, you know, just like sharing information like, do you know this book? Have you read this book? Like, do you know about these laws? Do you know what's going on in China? You know, like,
yeah.
And just doing more and more research about really like everything that's happening, you know, and current events and all kinds of stuff. Mostly history, though. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. And then, of course, you know, we kind of got back to some sort of schedule where we were not in our house every day. So then, you know, it kind of stopped.
So I'm assuming the name of the podcast comes from that Billie Holiday song for people that don't know.
Yeah,
called Strange Fruit.
Know, yeah, but also just like, yeah, it kind of has a double entendre. Like, you know, we are strange fruit, like in the music business.
Yeah. Yeah. Fits right into the dented cans.
You know analogy. What I mean? Just yeah. Like, first off, being a female in the business, also being a person of color and gay and like all the things. I have all the strikes against me.
You're checking all the boxes.
I checked all the boxes, you know?
Well, you know, for people that might not know who you are, I think it's such a cool story, especially for me, because my story with you begins when, were you a teenager when we met at the Middle East?
Still? I was in college, so that was probably like 18.
Okay, so this teenage girl comes up to me, young Nikki. You actually don't look a day older, honestly. So it has
it's
that
all a clean living, you know?
Which is one of the themes we want to talk about today. Is what you hit on so many of the themes that we love in this show, which I'm so glad to have you. But, you know, Nikki has this glint in her eye that everyone can see. And she walks in. She goes, you know, I'm going to play with you one day. And it just went all the way in. And I was like, I believe you.
Right.
What's your name? And we did. We ended up playing a bunch.
Yep.
Wow.
Probably my one of my top three favorite things I've ever done on this planet with Kofi was with you at that Earth, Wind, and Fire tribute in New Orleans. At
Jazz.
That
was one of my top three things that I've ever done, ever.
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 Period. Ever. I mean, Lifetime Achievement Award, Grammy, whatever, right? Anyway, she comes up to me, and that's how our story begins. And now, at this is how did you get from there to, well, just say Beyonce?
Yeah.
Like, what, from that, you know, much less all the way to here?
Just honestly, a lot of belief and determination, you know?
Dreams come true.
Yeah, you know, and people still nowadays don't realize like the power in their words. You know, whatever you say is what will happen. And that also includes what you can or cannot do. You know, people always say, oh, I can't do that. Yeah, you can't do it because you just said you couldn't.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's as simple as that. I know it doesn't seem like it, but it is.
No, it is. Henry Ford, it's huge of a fucking racist as he was. He said, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right.
You're right. And that's it.
That's it.
Yeah.
Was there a lot, like, so where did you grow up? Where, like, what area?
So I grew up in Montgomery County, Maryland, until I was 12, 13. And then I moved to Raleigh, North Carolina, where I went. Wow. That's where I went to high school all 4 years. Hmm. And then I went to Berkeley.
Okay, yeah. Let me stop you real quick. Because yep. I grew up in D.C., Montgomery County, Maryland. It's I have a right bunch of friends. Right? Yeah. Okay. You're female, of color, gay. I don't know if you knew you were gay in high school yet or not. But then you go to Raleigh, North Carolina. That had to be a little bit of a shift.
It was. Right? It was culture shock. It really was. Because when I got to high school, the school that I went to is called Southeast Raleigh High School Center for Accelerated Studies in Math, Science, and Technology.
That's the whole school.
Of the entire high school, right? So it was just Southeast Raleigh High. Okay. They started a new program when I attended that school. It was the first year that the school was opening, but it was a busing program.
Yeah. We need some people of color.
Busing kids. They were like busing white kids from these outer neighborhoods and like busing black kids from like this ghetto to the school. Mm. Right. So it literally was just, I think there were like three Chinese people in the school and like three Indian kids in the entire school.
Wow.
In the entire school. Everyone else was black and white. And like that was it. It was like the black people hung out and then the white people hung out. And I got there and I was like, what is going on? What is happening here? Because my eighth year birthday party, I had like my best friends are like this Jewish kid, you know, this Filipino girl, and like I had all nationalities. They were all my friends. All mm-hmm. You know, when I got there and didn't see, like, just saw, like, the lack of diversity, I was like, whoa. And then, like, some of my black friends were like, why are you hanging out with that dude over there, that white dude? You know, and I'm like, because he's my friend. I don't know.
Nice.
How to explain that, you know? Yeah. But,
well,
yeah,
D.C. is very international like that. Like, there's just a lot. Not that there's no segregation, natural,
birds of a feather flock together.
Yep. Going on, but there's a lot more of just there's a lot greater chance.
Yeah, I mean, band definitely was a safe haven, I would say, you know, because there was a mixture, you know, of the black and white kids, you know. So like, you know, my best friends were the people in the drum line, of course, you know, and like one of them was. He introduced me. Actually, he played me in utero. He played me in utero. You know, nice. And like so, yeah. He played me some Marilyn Manson, and you know, when I was in high school and stuff. And yeah, I mean, I obviously got all the R&B too, you know, from all my black friends. But that was really like how it was.
Were you playing before high school? Were you,
I grew up playing in church, you know, like I started pulling pots and pans out of the cupboard when I was two. And then, you know, my mom and my dad were kind of like, okay, we got this little person that likes beating on stuff. I guess we'll like get her a drum set. This, I got a Rice Krispies drum set like you get with when you send in 40 UPCs. I got one of those. Yeah. I'll send you guys a picture.
I would love to see that. I had a Muppet Babies drum set when I was a kid that had Animal on the bass drum.
Picture of
Animal.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I want the drumline pictures too, if you have the hat and the
they're somewhere. They are somewhere.
Pretty please.
Oh yeah.
So then you go from there to Boston and you go to Berkeley.
That was another culture shock.
In what way? A good way, a bad way, or everything?
Yeah, I mean, I guess probably both. Boston's probably one of the like most racist cities in the world, but like people don't really know about it, you know, because it's not really widely talked about. But I definitely experienced it there. I mean, like, I have a love-hate relationship with Boston because, like, the people that are like my best friends in the world, I met there, you know, I met at school and just in Boston at Wally's, you know, like that's where I met Nate, you know, I met Nate playing at Wally's, you know, and yeah, I mean, I remember, my girlfriend got me this book and it was just like, you know, the history of Boston. And it was like every city, every town, every street is like all slave owners, you know, Roxbury, Dorchester, like Faneuil Hall, like all of it, you know, which is kind of like, okay, those are the people that owned everything. So it makes sense.
Yeah. I had a friend, we've talked about that on this podcast because, you know, I lived in Birmingham, Alabama for 16 years. Well, 18, but 16 with a short blonde who's my ex-wife. And I never had a problem. But my friend, Barry Timus, he like got really good at martial arts because he got his butt beat the first day or got into an altercation. First day he moved to Boston. And he was like, dude, this is the most, and he became a martial artist just out of necessity, basically. And I've always heard, I joked that, you know, the white people don't like other white people in Boston, like Italian and Irish, and you know, like it's
no,
like,
totally. No,
it's more like we the sober them, and the drunk, I think, are probably massholes on the highway. Yeah, drive on any highway in New England, and if you see a Massachusetts plate, you know to give 2 car lengths distance on either side because they will cut you off. They will do all types. Yeah, massholes. That's a real thing.
Yeah, but you know what? I learned how to drive in Boston.
And you're probably a great driver.
I'm
aggressive
like
enough.
The greatest driver you will ever meet.
Do you like to drive?
Oh, I love driving. Yeah, you have to be offensive and defensive at the same time. You know, you got to play both sides. Like,
so you're not uncomfortable driving in New York.
Oh no! I mean, I lived in New York for almost 15 years. So,
where'd you live in New York?
Well, I started out in Williamsburg, Brooklyn.
Pre-gentrification?
Oh, yeah.
Now it's like, because it's out of this world expensive now.
Dude, it was crazy. I mean, I watched it all happen. Because, like, I was there. When I moved there, I moved into this, like, commercial building. Like, there was a guy that made hand drums, like, right next to us. And then, like, underneath us was a bakery. It was awesome. Yeah. It was like, it was an amazing loft. Actually, Dave Bayless was my roommate, the bass player in Pimps. Nice. We went to Berkeley together as well. But we had this like 2,500 square foot loft and we had like 6 rooms. They built rooms in there. We had an organ in there. I had my drums like in my bedroom because my bedroom was that big that I could have an entire band come in there and play. Wow. Like it was fun, but
still affordable.
Yeah, but now it's insane. You know, like the Starbucks went up. It was like that was it. That was it.
That's the sign.
The neighborhood.
Things are changing.
I have a bias against some things, and Starbucks is one of them. Starbucks, and
But I mean, so when you lived in Williamsburg, did you end up? Like, did you stay in Brooklyn or did you move over to Manhattan eventually?
No,
or?
I actually moved to Jersey and I was in Jersey for a while.
Boy, you picked two great states in the Northeast. Massachusetts and New Jersey.
It's funny because Jersey's awesome, man. Like, people don't really know. It's also kind of like Florida, you know? It's like people talk so much shit about Jersey because they only saw that show, Jersey Shore. I'm like, you've never even been to New Jersey. You know, they're like, you live in the armpit of America. I'm like, dude, it's fine. You do not have to know. You don't have to like it. I loved it. It was great. Literally right around the corner, I could get whatever I wanted on Route 22. Mm. You know, I could go buy some tile. I could go buy a car. I get groceries, you know, I got get clothes, buy a new phone, like whatever. All within like a 2 mile radius.
I didn't realize
that tri-state area of like everything that surrounds New York City, you know, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Massachusetts, like all that area. It just, you can get anything you want and you can get into the city in an hour or two, or Boston in a couple, you know, and it has its pros
like
and cons.
30 minutes
for sure.
From the city. And if I lived in the city, like if I lived in the Bronx or like Queens, it would take me even longer to get into the city.
Mm. Totally. You know? I hear you. I do it all the time.
So it was great. I had space, front yard, backyard, laundry, parking spots, you know, like.
Yeah, an actual life.
Rehearse in my basement. Vance Power would come and rehearse in the basement. I had a place to park the van and the trailer. It was great. And then I was in the city in a half hour. You know, I could take the train or the bus, or I could drive.
Parts of it are beautiful too, because I remember when I was with the Allman Brothers, we stayed. I wish I could remember the name of the town. It was a little town. It's just because of where we were playing. And I remember it's so beautiful. And I was like, where are we? Because, you know, I just woke up. Mm-hmm. And they were like, we're in New Jersey. And I was like, this is New Jersey? Mm-hmm. And then I saw the license plate, Garden State. And that part that I was in was lush, is how I would describe it. And I was like, oh, this is why they call it the Garden State. I just saw like the smelly industrial, you know.
Yeah, when you're on 95, when you're on 95 and you're driving into the city and there's that like –
that's
post-apocalyptic Terminator 2, like silo, the whole electric grid that like keeps, and it smells like burning wires and stuff.
We would be, living in DC and we'd drive up to New York. And I remember I'd be asleep in the car and the smell would wake me up. I'm like, he must be getting close to grandma's. Yep. You know, it's like, totally.
Everywhere's got their beautiful parts in there and their crummy parts for sure. But it's
so
like
when you were with, I want to go back to like how you got this gig with Beyonce, just for the, cause a lot of people, it's hard to tell people sometimes, like, you just got to believe in yourself and you just you know, and they're like, man, I don't want to hear
like,
that
that's
shit.
Cool. Like, you know,
tell me what really happened, you know, but sometimes, you know,
no, but
so is this when you were, it's still in Boston when this came about?
Yeah. So, I basically, what happened is I had a terrible experience at a wedding. Okay. I played a wedding at Abraham Lincoln's summer home. Okay. And I was in a band called Felix Brown. Shout out to those guys. But we were like a, you know, wedding band that we would play down at Faneuil Hall. We were like kind of like a party band, cover band, and played this wedding for these rich people, and we were just like the help, you know, like they set us up like on the ramp to the kitchen. Like that's where we ate dinner. Like the table was sideways like this. Yeah. And you know, they bring us out like three slices of, you know, rare steak and like a potato and three carrots. And I was like, cool. You know, like this is what we're worth, you know? And I vowed, I was like, this is it. This is the last wedding I'm ever playing. I quit like right then. I mean, I finished the gig, but I told them, I was like, this is it. This is my last one. Cause I had a bunch of experiences where it just like, wasn't cool. You know, it was like, it was the 1930s, you know, you're black, you're a musician. You come in through the kitchen, you on the back door, you load your shit in. We do not see you unless you're on stage, you know? Yeah. And like, there were specific things in the contracts, you know, that's like, you can't walk around, you can't, you know, be in cocktail hour and like all this stuff, you know? So we actually had one white dude in the band. it was Andy, that's my homie. But he would like, you know, you got to like joke and like make light of this stuff because you go through this shit every day, you know? So this dude would like, he would walk around, he would go to cocktail hour and like eat shrimp and drink beer and stuff. And he would literally be like laughing at us, you know, like, look what I can do. I can blend in because I'm white, you know? And I know for like some people, they'd be like, man, that's really dark. But I mean, you know, that's what it was, you know?
So when you quit though, is that, can I ask, like, was that your source of income at the time?
Yeah.
Was that your only source?
It was my source of income at the time because I left Berkeley because I figured out that, I didn't need a piece of paper to play and to get paid.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how old I was, 20, 21. You know, I was making at least like $500 a wedding, you know, playing like two or three of those a week. Mm. That's good money for a young musician. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I could do this. It's only going to go up from here. So, you know, I'm paying out the ass, you know, to like not even really go to class, you know, because I was gigging. I was gigging. Yeah. I figured it out. I was like, all right, I don't need to do this. So when I quit, though, God was like, go to New York. Mm-hmm. Like, it was kind of like clear as day, just like, go to New York. And I was like, okay. So I quit. I packed up all my stuff and I moved to New York like December 19th. Who moves in?
No one.
December 19th. You know,
so just straight revelation.
Straight revelation. December 19, 2005.
Wow.
I moved to New York. And when I got my room, like I gave them my rent and I was like, okay, well, what am I going to do now? You know, like
that's intimidating. That's know anybody extremely like, intimidating city
I,
to not
I
know
I knew
anybody.
Like a couple of people in the city. Like I knew Mark Kelly, you know, and like a couple of Berkeley musicians here and there. Kraz was there, you know, so like I used to go hang out at his house almost every day for like 6 months. I was at his crib. We were making beats, doing whatever, eating, smoking, you know, watching TV, just hanging.
That's great.
But yeah, I, you know, went there and I was just kind of like, okay, I don't know what I'm going to do now. Because I don't have any gigs down here. All my gigs are up north. So I continued to drive up north and play gigs, you know, with the Sam Kininger band. And, I was freelancing, doing some other stuff, too. And basically, people sent me messages on MySpace and were like, yo, there's an open call for Beyonce. Like, you have to go, you know. And I honestly thought that it was like a gimmick, you know, like she would hire us for like the promotional tour for like 2 months and then she'd get her regular band, you know.
Because this was an all-girl band.
Because, right. Yeah, it was an all-girl band. And she actually did do something like that on her first record. I remember seeing her on... It was like one of those TV shows, but she had like Sheila E. was playing drums and like Ron, I think Ron Smith was playing bass.
Oh, I love her.
She had like, you know, she had an all female band, but it was like, you know, the chicks. Yeah. And I remember seeing that, but then they were gone like right after that. You know what I mean? So I thought it was going to be something like that. But I went, I had like $50 in my pocket. Like, legit, I had $50 in my pocket. I was supposed to go to Nantucket to play at the Chicken Box with Sam. Okay? And it was like, you know, it was a two-day gig. You know, it's like Monday and Tuesday. You know, you spend the night because you got to take a ferry to get over there. And I was like, the audition was on Monday. So it was like, if I miss Monday, I'm going to miss Tuesday, too. And it was like $400, you know, it's like, I need to go get this money, you know, but I went to the audition. I was like, I'll figure it out. You know what I'm saying? And I didn't think that I got the gig or anything because I just sat around for like a week. You know, I hung out with my best friend, Adam Joseph. He fed me that week because I only had, you know, I only had like $50, so he fed me that week. I slept on his couch. It was awesome. And that Friday they called me and was like, congratulations, you've been selected to come back, you know. So it was another audition process.
All in New York, right?
All in New York. Yeah, at Sony Studios. Mm-hmm. So then I went that Friday. Well, Saturday. It was a Saturday. And we were in there for like 10 hours or something. And they were just bringing in different combinations of musicians, you know, like this bass player with this keyboardist and this bassist. And they did that for like 10 hours.
Wow.
And then they dwindled the group down maybe to like 50. And we're like, we can't decide. You guys have to come back tomorrow. So then we went back the next day on the Sunday and kind of like did the same thing. You know, it was a little less time, but we did the same thing. And they couldn't decide between me and KT. So like they took both of us. You know,
wow.
That's how like it was two drummers, because they were just like, we can't figure it out. So we'll just take them both, you know. But that was it was a great day, because I remember when Rie came in. So Rie, the keyboard player, she was playing with Eric Benet. So she missed Saturday, and she thought like, oh no, like I'm going to miss this gig, but they let her come on Sunday. And she came on Sunday and she walked in and I was like, oh, it's Rie. Cause like we went to school together, you know? Nice. And I knew, I was like, oh, she's bad. Like she has to get this gig. But man, she came in and like we connected on something, on a solo or something. And
yeah,
they were like all going nuts. And that's kind of like, you know, how it happened, really.
Wow.
That is how it happened. And it was on Father's Day. So I called my dad and I was like, I got the gig. And he's like, no, you didn't. I was like, no, I got the gig. He's like, no, you didn't. No, you didn't. I'm like, no, for real. I got the gig. And he was like, he screamed like a little girl. And he was like, oh my God, I can't believe it. You got the gig.
That's great.
Because he came to visit me in New York, like right after I moved there. And I'm thankful for Mark Kelly, because my dad was just really worried. He was just like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing with your life? You dropped out of school. You came to New York. Like, you don't have any money. Like, you're in New York City. You know, like, what are you doing? And Mark, we went to see him at the Zinc Bar. And Mark looked at my dad and, like, put his hand on his back and was like, she's going to be fine. Like, don't worry about it. You know? Like, I know you don't see what's happening or what's going on, but, like, she's going to be okay. You know? And then a couple months later, I got the gig.
Wow. That's amazing. You know, in New York, I mean, there are two things there that you said that are super important. It's having someone like Mark where you can even go like, if they believe in me, then I should believe in myself, right?
Yeah.
Because that's scary as hell, $50 in your wallet and that's it. And also New York is always good at showing you who you are one step away from becoming.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you walk around New York and you're like, okay, I'm somehow figuring out how to eat and how to perform and whatever, and you turn the corner and there's someone that's not eating and you're like, okay, I'm doing all right. Like we talked about last night, Oteil, you know, it's like, we're good.
Yeah.
You know, New York's good at that.
There's a couple things that I want to backtrack now, because I didn't know this story of you, but you know, I said before, one of the reasons I want to have you on is because I know you're into so many of the themes that we cover, spirituality being a big one.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand how you could trust a revelation like that because of your church background.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because other people might go, you're crazy.
Yeah, duh.
But
they would.
Yeah, when you know, you know. But what I'm interested in is, and I don't know when being gay became, like, when you realized it and how much time it took to come out, all that stuff. But in regards to church, like, how did that work together, or did it? Were they separate times or?
Yeah. Oh, no. Like, yeah, I grew up in church, you know, but I mean, I definitely knew like early on, you know.
Well, when you say early on, like what? Because I've asked some gay friends of mine. One of them told me 5 years old.
Yeah, I mean, I must have been like, I don't know, 8 or 9 or something like that. Or it's just like, I'm attracted to women. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm attracted to men too. Like, but, you know, that was more like, oh, whoa. Like, you know, that was, it was okay for me to be attracted to men because that's how it's supposed to be, you know? But like being attracted to women is like, no way, you know.
Especially in black church, right? Well, yeah, I can't say it's all the same, but.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a struggle for a long time, you know. Even being comfortable, like, just saying it, you know, in an interview or out loud, you
know.
What
about to your parents?
Yeah, I mean, well, I told them early when I was having feelings, you know. And it was like, you know, I'm going to pray for you and... You know, we're gonna get this demon out of you. They still pray for me.
Are you an only child?
I am an only child.
So, but obviously, even if they're praying for you to not be gay, they haven't ostracized you, right?
No, they have not ostracized me because I am their child. You know, it's,
and your dad sounds awesome.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely people that have experienced that, which is really, really heartbreaking and sad, you know. But yeah, my parents are great. They love me for who I am.
Well, I'm just glad for that, so that it didn't sour your spiritual connection. Because for a lot of people, they throw the whole thing out, you know.
They do throw the whole thing out. And I had to, like, really search and dig deep and understand, you know, that you don't throw the whole thing out, you know, because, I mean, I feel like the best way that I can explain it to people, or try to anyway, is, like, religion is man-made. Spirituality is not, you know, like you have a spirit, whether you like believe you do or not,
right?
You know what I'm saying? And like, you can call God whatever you want, you know, like God, I feel like is just, it's a name that, you know, like most people use, but it could be Mother Earth or like the energy that surrounds us or whatever, you know. Yeah. It's just like, that's the name that we've given to that being, source, what have you. But it took me a long time to understand that religion is kind of, it's made to separate and alienate and all of those things, you know. But if you actually study different kinds, different types, you know, like I went to a Korean Buddhist temple for probably like 3 years when I was living in Jersey, and everything that they said, everything that they taught, I was like, there's nothing wrong with this. But if you're raised in church, you're taught that it's sacrilege and that it's, you know, you're bowing to false and idol gods and all of this. And I'm like, I went there and experienced it for myself and was like,
yeah.
They are not saying anything wrong.
That's awesome.
There is nothing wrong with what is going on here, you know, but I feel like that's just kind of like, people have to experience that for themselves, you know.
It's almost the luck of the draw based on their personality type, because my dad chucked the whole thing. My parents were both raised Catholic in New York. My dad chucked the whole thing. My mom just chucked the organized part.
Yeah.
So, you know, she obviously, but it was a feeling, you know. Yeah. It's a theme I always want to go back to, because I had such long debates with people who say they're atheists. And I don't really believe they are.
Right.
The goal shifts, the goalpost shifts, you know. So my whole thing is like, we and Mike were talking about this last night, like, does it matter or doesn't it not matter? Like, you say, I don't believe in anything that can't be scientifically proven. Okay. Well, love is one of those things. So if I kill someone you love on a whim, does it not matter? Now, they say they say it does matter. And I say, well, how can you, if you can't prove it scientifically,
right. Yeah.
Then what are you left? They say, well, because I know it. And I'm like, oh, well,
yeah. you don't get
to say that.
Yeah. Well,
so that means now that you're not really a scientific materialist, so I can be specific about this.
Yeah, be specific.
Because I think semantics is everything hanging us up. But, you know, so much of what you and Nth Power deal with is that it does matter in all these different ways, and here's how and here's why.
Thanks for listening. We'll be right back after this.
Hey there, Osiris listeners. I wanted to tell you about our friends over at Smart Wool. For more than 25 years, Smart Wool has been making merino wool socks and apparel designed to keep you comfortable. Because they want to help you play, laugh, and explore in the outdoors with every thread they knit and every step you take. Because they believe that comfort sharpens focus and lets you perform beyond your limits. They are here to help you feel good. Now, it's up to you how far you will go. Take 15% off of your first order at smartwool.com. Smart Wool. Go far, feel good.
What's up, everyone? I'm Mike.
And I'm Oteil.
And these are our Sunset Lake CBD gummies that are almost gone. Sunset Lake CBD is a farmer-owned business that ships CBD products directly from their farm to your door.
For years, Sunset Lake was a Vermont dairy farm producing milk for Ben & Jerry's ice cream. In 2018, they diversified and started growing hemp for CBD.
And with a product for everyone, they offer pre-rolls, hemp cigars, and hemp flowers, as well as tinctures, gummies, and CBD-crafted coffee to help with stress, aches, and pains.
Sunset Lake CBD saves you money by shipping high-quality CBD products directly from their farm to your door.
Want to know what I've been using a lot of, Oteil? This salve with the arnica on my old bones. You get back from a show and you got tore ankle, rub a little bit of this on there. You're ready to dance the next day. And you know, Sunset Lake, comes a time listeners can visit sunsetlakecbd.com and use promo code time for 20% off of their purchase. That's sunsetlakecbd.com, promo code time, and tell them we sent you.
Thanks for listening.
There's so much power in saying, I don't know. And like admitting, I don't know everything. And I think that a lot of when you're a kid and you're brought up, forced into something, and they say this, it, like you just said, you're bowing to a false, you know, like, no, I'm not. I actually went and I listened to it. And it's the same foundation that we have. Yet they're not saying you're wrong. You're saying they're wrong. So I think that the natural instinct is to kind of push back because I don't want to be forced to have to think someone is wrong because they're not like in the same four walls as me or whatever, you know? Yeah. And we talked a lot last night too about how it's who maybe ruined it for you growing up. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean by that? Like, music could have been ruined for you with a bad drum teacher. You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely. Jazz was ruined for me for a while because of that.
Really?
Absolutely.
How?
And like, I had this dude, he just did me dirty, you know, and just like, instead of teaching, just like embarrassing.
Yes. I had an English teacher that did that.
I was like, fuck this. Fuck your jazz. I don't need this shit. I'm about to go play some punk. You know? But, you know, the older I get, I'm like, man, I really need to study some jazz.
But you can't let that guy ruin it for you. See, that's
the
thing.
I can't let him ruin it for me.
Same here, though. I think about that.
It's incredible. It's amazing. You know what I mean? Yeah. But like for a long time, I was just like, nope, not doing it.
It's the whole problem I always had with religion was that thing of like, you can't admit that your way may not be the only way.
Absolutely.
I can't take that. I can't take that.
Yeah, but here's what I can't stand. It's that not everybody, there's people in every religion that are not that way.
Yeah,
exactly.
So we can't throw all those people out because, you know,
you're right. And the thing the thing I've said is that, like, you know, because Nikki, you said it just like you're taught in school and like, you know, catechism and whatever, like Sunday school is like, if you don't believe in the Roman Catholic way of doing things, then you're wrong. And I'm like, there's a guy somewhere remote living in a, born and raised and dies in a place that like in a, an area that maybe he never heard this story. So he goes to hell because what if he spent his entire life helping people? What if he spent his entire life dedicated to others? He goes, well, and they go, well, sorry, you never.
That's a misreading of the Bible because Paul talks about that very thing. What about someone who has, he goes, well, they still have a conscience and that came from God.
Right.
So that's what I'm saying. A lot of these people that misuse it, they know they're lying. They have read it. They know that that's not true.
Yeah.
You know?
It's so interesting. Like, because, yeah, I mean, I know this because I come from it. Yeah. Just what people decide to omit.
Exactly. And that's, boy, CNN, MSNBC, Fox.
Because I said so. Right?
Lies of omission.
Yeah.
So lies now you've changed, like when you set the context and you frame it and then you omit this and that, and that's like, yeah. See, Jesus says we should all be slaves. That's what they told the slaves.
Right.
You know, which he did say, but he said everybody should be a slave to one another. So there's no master-slave relation. We're all serving each other.
We're all serving each other. And that's the other thing about religion in general, is that it has been weaponized before, mm-hmm. which is why like I really don't, you know, get into that. You know, it's like I will take this from here and this from here, mm-hmm. and this from here, because like that's what it is, you know.
Yeah.
So
I like that,
being beholden to like this one thing that I know has like destroyed my people. You know, that's something that I'm really thankful for as it relates to the Nth Power, is that we all come from different religious backgrounds.
Ah, that's why it's so.
Okay, like Nigel is Muslim, you know, I don't know if he still practices or whatever, but that's how he was raised. You know, Nate used to practice Buddhism, you know, Nick. Catholicism, me, you know, Christian, I was raised in church, and Weedy, you know, has a completely different
this stuff is deep.
Background, you know,
all the African.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so like when we all would like get together and like talk about certain ideas and what have you, we all come from a different place. From a religious standpoint, we come from a different place. But when we talk and put our heads together, it's spirituality. It's all of those things. So it's like you have something from here, from here, from here, from here, from here. And then it's like, oh, guys, you know, like your thing says this, my thing says that. Like, wait, hold on, you know, time out. We're all talking about the same shit.
What a great model for society, huh?
Well, that's what America,
the great experiment,
supposed to be on paper, but
it's supposed to be on paper, right?
But I always look at it like a buffet. Like, you know, if you have an international buffet and this is the chicken row. Now you got Korean chicken, you got fried chicken, you got Indian
chicken parm,
you got Mexican. Like, it's all chicken. It's all different. Chicken. It's all chicken. But some of them, these three all use cumin in different ways.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I'm like that. When I read the Bhagavad Gita, I was like, wow, so much of this sounds like the New Testament and parts of the Old. And then the Tao, the Book of the Tao, that's the one I go back to more than anything lately. But and you just see these things, and to me that strengthens me, you know. And and when something happens, like you do get something in your essence, go to New York now. It's like
you got paid to it.
And then you pack all your shit. See, this is what I'm talking about. I'm talking about just like, you know, oh, I look at it this way and that and semantics and blah, blah, blah. Like, no, I heard a voice and I packed all my shit. And because of that, you know,
Like, well, that's, yeah, going back to what you were talking about, that's a hardcore moment in your life where you go, I'm quitting this thing that I hate because I'm in this position, you know, like even just the example of like being on that, like slanted, then the table's tipped and you're, you know, like it just sounds atrocious. And then you're like, but it is the thing that's keeping the food in your belly and your lights on. But you go, no, I'm leaving it. I'm quitting. And then to go with no money, such a scary place with no money. You have to have some sense that, like, if you believe in nothing, that's a hard move, you know? Like, you just stay in Boston and just, you know what I mean? Like, that's, you got to have faith in at least yourself, which sometimes is the hardest thing.
Yourself.
Yeah.
Well, you wouldn't have even trusted the intuition that told you to do it.
Right.
Yeah. If you didn't believe.
So in 2021, in the fall, going into the winter, as we are here, and the world is kind of matched up with where we are going into this kind of cold closing up thing again, and everything is shit still. when you take your, you know, the stories and the lessons and the belief that you have and the faith and the people that you surround yourself with, like, what do you pull for? What do you pull like strength from at this point? You know what I mean? Like when you think about the, you know, just where we are as a culture and as a society, like, man, you personally.
Yeah, that's a good question, because I mean, really, I look for it every day, you know, and it could be like, it could be small gestures. It could be like something I see, you know, somebody helping somebody out with a flat tire or whatever, you know. Like, it's that, it's music. Music, like, really gives me hope, you know. It saved me.
Me too.
It saved a lot of people.
Yeah.
And it continues to save. So, there's that, you know, really just, like, focusing on spreading the message far and wide, because like there's a lot of work to do and we can do it. We absolutely can do it. We just have to focus and band together in order to make positive change.
I always feel like you have so much energy you put towards that. It puts me, it makes me feel guilty about myself. But probably before I got the podcast, because now with the podcast,
yeah,
I have a way to broadcast, you know.
Yeah, but you have a way, you're doing it.
But you're, I still marvel at you, you know, after being on a and on big stages and playing these huge places with Beyonce, and then you get in the van and you got to drive 1,200 miles now with Nth Power to play little places. But I know, I never think, oh, I wonder if she's wishes she could be back on the big stick. Because you're such a, you have such a sense of purpose to spread, like a mission, a sense of mission. I mean, you're like a missionary. I mean,
every stage is the big stage.
Yeah, totally.
Because I never know who is being affected by it, really. Mm-hmm. And we've had a couple of instances where people came up to us and said, told us. This one guy, we were in Nashville, and this guy tells me and Nick, we're like standing together, and he's like, I tried to kill myself a couple weeks ago. And I put your album on while I was trying to commit suicide. And Nick immediately is just like, man, you gonna try and kill yourself to our music? Like, he's like, man, like, you know.
Good luck with that.
And wow. He said that, like, he, you know, rolled the window down, put a tube in the exhaust, with the exhaust through the window, rolled it up, turned on Abundance. And okay, And then he wakes up. He wakes up on Home. The song Home. I don't live here anymore. The key no longer fits in the door. Days turn to night, night turns to day, and it's all the same. And I don't care. I don't care.
Wow.
Like, I've tried so many times to change. I've hurt so many in my past. So much to blame. You know, remember a home, remember the light, remember the love, remember the dream, remember the fight that you fought to get here. He woke up. And that was playing. And he looks and the window is like mysteriously down. Oh, he like passed out for I don't know how long. Because Home is towards the end of the album.
He probably should have been dead.
And he woke up and like that was playing. And he was like, what am I doing?
His window was mysteriously down.
Mysteriously. You know, and he came to a show and he like told us that. And I was like, oh my God. Like, what? And in that moment, I was like, okay. Clearly, like, it may not look like it with ticket sales. It may not look like it in album sales. It may not look like it monetarily, whatever. Who cares?
Yeah.
That's all
it's working.
Your mission is being accomplished.
It's working. There was another guy that came to see us in Chattanooga. It wasn't Chattanooga. Knoxville. Tennessee, man.
Yeah, Tennessee.
Came to see us in Knoxville, and he said, I have to tell you a story. I have it on video. It's somewhere. We posted it at some point. Wow. And he said that his mom... It's just him and his mom. His mom, like, had a stroke and went into a coma. And the doctors were like, she's not going to wake up. And even if she does, she's only going to have 20% of her brain. She'll never be able to walk. She won't be able to speak. Like, nothing. He goes to the hospital. He plays her our album. Right now, he said, when it got to the chorus, celebrate what you've been given. This life is so worth living right now. She opened her eyes. Full recovery. Right now.
Right now.
She's walking, talking, doing everything. The doctors were like, I don't know. You know,
take that, science. Yeah.
But you know what? It is science.
It is. We forgot.
It is.
Physics, wow. Metaphysics, chemistry, alchemy, astronomy, astrology, right? It's all, you know.
Damn.
Just left brain, right brain. It is science.
It is science.
And it works. And we know it works.
We know it works.
They say, well, you can't prove it. But that doesn't change the fact I know it. I can't prove
that love exists. We can't prove it.
Well, but I mean, you know, to this, to them, you know what I mean?
Tennessee, it's happening.
We have to be able to repeat it, or they'll come up with some bullshit. We're dealing with different criteria. You can't prove that love exists, but you know you love whoever you love, you know it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and you know what else too? That guy that, you know, the first story you told, no one can even begin to assess the amount of courage it took him to even probably go to that show, let alone come up and talk to you afterwards.
No, absolutely. He said that too. He's like, I'm shaking.
Yeah.
Wow. But I feel like I have to tell you this.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you for telling.
And now you tell us this, and everyone who's listening can hear it, and that's what it's all about. And I think that's the small things, someone changing the tire, someone, you know, those are the important things. That's all we have right now, I think. I love that you said that. It was like the things, it's this just witnessing something good. Remember I told you, Oteo, last night, like if I see someone do something nice, I can't keep it together.
Yeah.
It's just like, man, just what is like, it's just,
I don't even try. Crying just saved me this last tour, so I'll go ahead and cry.
for real.
It's like, if you have any like inkling, or you lean to the empathetic side of it, or the you know, compassionate side of it, it's a tough run right now, you know. So when you do see something, you're like, oh, I'm not alone. I'm not the only one that feels like people are people still, and it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing. Like, my wife works in healthcare, and during this pandemic, it's just been like, I mean, you just to see the blatant like selfishness with a lot of people, you know, and that shit's just like, it just gets old. But yeah, for every like the yin and yang of it, for sure.
I really am starting to think, at least in one major sense, and maybe in the dominant sense, that heaven and hell is here in this reality. Because when you think of, like, we've all, I'm sure, been to our own, you know, albeit different levels of hell, but we all know what that feeling, the feeling of hopelessness, right? You know, like, it's bigger. The darkness seems like you can't beat it. And then, you know, some people are going through real, like I was reading the Book of Joy with the Dalai Lama, him and Desmond Tutu, you know, and they're talking about, you know, the Chinese were against them and tortured them and did all kinds of stuff. And they said that of the different kinds of torture they experienced, this one was the worst, and they were like forced to cannibalize each other. You know, like someone that had died to survive, you know. But yet the monk was like, you know, I have to feel compassion for the guard forcing me to do this. I was like, whoa.
Holy shit. Level.
That's some next level shit right there, you know. So I only say that to talk about the different levels of hell. But that's hell, man. Come on. Come on. Like, but, you know. Like Nigel sitting in my lap explaining Pokemon to me or whatever. And I feel like I'm in heaven.
Yeah.
I do. I feel, I'm like, this is real.
Yeah.
This feeling is not fake.
Marley said it. You know, if you know what life is worth,
you look for yours on earth.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Get up, stand up. I mean, we've talked about this a lot, which is like why, you know, the Ant's Power does what it does. And like when we do our tributes, you know, like there's a reason why we do it. Like everything that, you know, every song that Marley, the Wailers, like ever wrote, still applicable today. Timeless.
Yep. You know,
like sad. Like we haven't.
Yep.
Progressed in any way. We're still like fighting this fight. But if there was no fight, like what would we be doing? You know, like it's like if there is no struggle, like what would be?
Nothing.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, and that's
like yin and yang, like you have to have
the
dark with the light. But anyway, you know, he was a prophet.
Yeah.
You know.
Absolutely. Sure. And it's like that's the interesting thing too, is like sometimes and you know, to the point of like how one religion might not be the right one for you, but or not even religion, like a teaching. For me, the whole guilt thing with Catholicism and religion and all that was like, all right, yeah, I get it. I'm always wrong. It's my fault. Like yep.
Yeah.
But the thing I loved about Buddhism was the first thing you hear is like all of life is suffering. Mm-hmm. It's saying a lot of the same stuff, but it's just to be put in like a different light is shined on it. Mm-hmm. And you're like, I get that. Okay. So all of life is suffering. So I'm not the only one that feels like shit, you know? And that almost kind of makes you feel like, oh, all right, well, maybe this fight's worth fighting, you know? And that's the interesting. And then you go, okay, well, once you get a grasp on that, you're like, well, how do I make it less suffering for others, you know? And I guess then that's, if you could do that, then
Who cares?
Which is exactly what Jesus taught.
So it's kind of like, yeah, right?
He said, like, if you're walking around feeling like everything's your fault, then that's the opposite of grace. Hmm. It's like you admit that you're not perfect. So it's not like, oh, I'm terrible all the time. But you do have to admit that you fall short. But then after that, there's like that's the whole purpose of grace, which is why it was called good news. Like, if it doesn't sound good, it's wrong.
Yeah.
It's period. Because you can't call it the good news.
Right.
And it sounds like the worst news ever. You know? it's so messed up. But also with the suffering, the exact same thing.
Right.
First noble truth is suffering. Jesus says, take up your cross. So you give your suffering meaning. Right? So you lose your life to save it. You serve someone else, you lose your life. You become the slave, you lose your life. Not like I give, and in giving, I save it. So now I'm helping other people. You know, it's like, so how they twisted that is just like psychopathic.
Sure.
Or I guess sociopathic.
Money.
Well, yeah, and just like everything else, you know? Yeah. It's money. Music can be perverted that way, but we don't throw it out. It
has been, yeah.
And will continue to be.
Yep.
Right?
Yes.
You go to the jazz bin, you see Kenny G, and you go, well, fuck jazz, if you hate Kenny G. But it's like, well, what about Coltrane? Hold on, like, you know. Like, you know.
Yeah.
You can't throw the whole thing out, you know.
Can't throw the whole thing out.
Because that's what keeps me, I don't know, like, holding on. Plus, you get these these messages. Move to New York right now. Okay.
Yeah, right.
How's it feel to be back out on the road real quick before we've been with you for an hour now. Are you loving it?
Yeah, I'm loving it. It's really amazing to be back out with the Power. Just like,
yeah,
you know, like having these moments every day. You know, like Nate and I were talking before we got on here, and like we're both having these like really vivid dreams, like with like we started dreaming again, like vividly. Like I thought fully that it happened, but it was a dream.
Nice.
You know, like I had a dream. Like I called up my homie to like come to this show, and I was like, hey man, what are you doing? Like, we're playing in Boston on Sunday. Like, he come, and he's like, oh no, I gotta work. And I was like, okay. And then like Nate's like, did you hit up Bowie? And I was like, yeah, he said he had to work. And it was a dream. I called him up and was like, dude, I just realized that did not actually happen.
Wow. You're getting some good sleep, man.
We're like, okay, we have it at 8. He's like, didn't I see you didn't this? And I was like, no. And he's like, oh, that was a dream.
Well, maybe this podcast isn't even really happening.
It'd be a dream.
Maybe we're all in Nikki's dream right now, and you're going to wake up, and none of this shit ever happened. The pandemic, none of it. Right? It's all just Nikki's dream.
that would be terrible.
She was like, it's going so well.
Right.
So how's
it's a good ending to a bad dream.
How's it been like with the, because you know, on our tour we just had this massive amount of money spent trying to keep a tour bubble, and you know, I'm sure we would only play if it was outdoors. Like, you're doing indoor. How do you feel? I experienced a lot of paranoia just trying to stay testing negative.
Right.
How's that part been for you guys, the whole variant thing?
Yeah, it's been like, honestly, like for me personally, I can't live in fear.
Yes.
So like I am consciously making the decision not to. And at the same time, doing all the things that I know I need to do to protect myself and the people around me. You know, I'm making wellness cocktails for everyone. You know, like, we take our oil of oregano. You know, we take our iodine. We take all our stuff, you know, because it can only help.
Yeah. Like, you know. Immune boosting.
Yeah,
a moon wellness booster. Cocktails. That sounds good.
Yeah, wellness cocktail. You know, that's like, that is the main thing, you know, and also, you know, just not trying not to be in close proximity, you know, but washing your hands is like a, you know, a lost concept.
Like, the simplest,
people,
right?
To wash their hands, you know. Mike Dillon has a song. It's called Crab Rangoon, and it's a lyric in the song. Wash your hands, Smith the Kill. Wash your hands, Smith the Kill. Wash your hands.
I love it.
That's it.
So today is Kofi's birthday.
Oh shit, really?
It is.
So we gotta talk about it. We gotta talk about you and Kofi a little bit. It snuck up on me. I just got back from tour 3 days ago, or this is the third day. And I didn't realize till last night at like 10 o'clock when my sister wrote me this thing. Oh, I was like, crazy. Oh my God, Kofi's birthday.
You just said it and I was like, oh yeah, the 22nd. Like,
I haven't posted anything, you know, and it just like, it snuck up on me. But, you know, I mentioned the Earth, Wind & Fire tribute that we got to do together with Kofi. Tell me your first, like your story with Kofi, you know.
You know what's funny is that I was thinking about this the other day. I actually don't remember where we met.
Which time, yeah.
Or like how we met. It was just like we started playing.
Probably in New Orleans, huh?
If I had to guess, New Orleans. Probably.
That was the one time that he was kind of reliably, you know, because he was on tour with TTB all these in Australia or China or some shit, you know. But New Orleans was when I would always get to see him, like, reliably, you know, during Jazz Fest.
Yeah, I guess it was during Jazz Fest. And I don't know, man, like, we just, like, clicked, you know, immediately. Just like, you want to play? Yeah, let's play.
Kofi's like that. He's a vibe guy.
Yeah, he just and I'm likes like, it. You want to play these gigs? You know, like, you want to come in the studio? Like, you know.
Yeah, and y'all's album is about to drop, which he played keyboards on, right?
Yes, he did.
Oh, wow.
Yes, he did. He, man, you know, obviously I don't have to tell you, but such an incredible spirit and just all the things. Musician, yeah, but like, I feel like who he was just like flowed out of him effortlessly into music. Like, you can hear it, you know. It's like, there's, if nobody knew who he was, they could listen to a flute solo and know in 2 seconds, you know, exactly who he is. And, you know, he blessed us tremendously. And I'm so happy that we finally get it out. We finally get to release it. It's going out. People are going to hear it. It's coming out the 29th, a week from today.
Wow.
A week from its birthday. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I remember when Nick sent me these tracks, you know, it was right after he died, like right when he died. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I played that song at his funeral. The lyrics, you guys are like an oracle. You've saved lives. But it was just the lyrics hit me so hard because that was like what I would have wanted to say to him. And I felt like that was God saying it to Kofi because I knew he heard those lyrics when he played that song with you.
Yeah.
You know, so it was like you always get these breadcrumbs from God if you will follow them. Mm-hmm. It's always like any good parent, you know. And so that it's funny you talk about the effect that your songs have on people, because there was a huge mystical. It was so big. I was walking around my house just crying, texting Nick because I could see it all. It just gave me clarity. And it was a great gift to me to help me like release. It's like everything is okay, as weird as that sounds. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like I knew God reached right to him personally, probably a number of times, mm-hmm. you know. And even though that song might have been written towards Nigel at the time and not Kofi. But, right. you know, God will use right. whatever. Like, I don't know who it was written to or whatever. Maybe to himself. But, yeah, that was such a huge thing for me, man. Like, and you know, Nigel... first concert was Nth Power. So I just feel like I have just so much connection with you guys. And I'm definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a very, very strong connection with you as well. I mean, you know, you, for the band, you are like, you know, a huge influence. And like, you're my favorite musician, like, period. But you know, band as well. Like we love you so much, and Kofi too. Like it's just like an honor and a blessing, and like all of those things to be able to share spaces and to share ideas and create. You know, it's really like an honor and a privilege, and man. I mean, you're going to hear it and like, I mean, the rest of it, you know, like, I don't know if he's sent you the whole thing. I know he's sent you like a couple of tracks, but.
I think he sent me two or three. I can't wait to hear it. And they obviously weren't mixed, mastered, all that stuff. So I really, I can't wait.
You know, like going back to like the songs, like, honestly, like, I mean, it speaks to me. Which is crazy. Like I had to, there was a moment where I was like, I need to adhere to my own lyrics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, we wrote a song a couple years ago called Truth. And it could not ring more true than today with everything that we're going through with the pandemic, you know, and I listened to it when we played the first time at Peach Fest. That was the first time we played in like a year and 4 months or something like that. And when we got to Truth, like every lyric that like Nick sang, I was like, like, oh my God. I'm like, is anybody else hearing this? You know, like we wrote it years ago, you know?
Yeah.
Like Gil said, the revolution will be televised. Yeah. These days I start to see it with my own eyes. You know, the media has got you fused with a state of fear, believing all the hate and lies that you hear. Yeah. I used to believe everything they told me was true. But since 9/11, I know I stay lied to. Go smash your TV. You can choose to be free. Stand up and be a new page in history.
Come on.
You know what I'm saying? And it's like, now I see that spirit is our only weapon. We need to learn again to use our true power within. They can never take that away. Yeah. It can't turn night to day. They don't want to hear me say, truth exists all around you. Don't believe what they spit at you. They don't want you to know love. They don't want you to know that you belong. They don't want you to look above. They don't want you to know that you are strong. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, man. I feel it.
Wow. And like, I was like, oh my God. You know, like.
Song is preaching to me.
I mean, we turn the fucking TV off. Turn it off. Yep. If I have any advice to give to anyone.
Turn your TV off.
Turn the TV off.
And give jazz a chance.
Like, you need to know about current events. It's good to be informed, yada, yada, yada. We all need to be cognizant of the trash that we are taking in.
Yeah, totally.
It makes you sick.
Yeah. It's dividing up families. It's ruining friendships.
People physically ill. I'm looking at something that's telling me I'm going to die. You're going to die. If you catch this thing, you're going to die. You're going to die. You're going to die. You're going to die.
And it, the first thing you do is you sneeze and you're like, do I have it?
Yes.
You know, I got a runny nose. Oh, no, I'm going to die.
It's like you never had a runny nose before COVID. You never sneezed before COVID.
Oh, man, I start coughing on the
road. There was never a cold. There was never anything. You know, and it's like, that's really what I see. I stopped watching the news probably 11 or 12 years ago, I think.
Me too, over 10.
Because every time I turned it on, this person was raped, killed, this happened, that happened. It was all that, all the time. And like, me being an empath, I was like, it was overwhelming. Yeah. I would cry whenever I watched the news. Yeah. And I was like, I have to turn this off. Yeah. Because I'm literally just like sitting in my room crying, like, what am I going to do? Like, what is that family going to do? What is it? You know, like, what's happening? What are we doing?
And they never show you the good shit to balance you out.
Never.
No, at the very end they go, and here's a dog that, you know.
Or once a year, CNN heroes.
Yeah, totally. Right. Whatever.
Yeah.
No, it's, but, you know, what's funny is that like the 6:30, like just the stupid habits we would get into during COVID, because it was like a new, you know, like we were like in a snowstorm for a year, right? You had to sit in the house. 6:30 news would come on, that ABC World News, and it would just be like, we're starting now tonight with the COVID numbers, and it would just be like, deaths are this and hospitalizations are that, and then it's, let's go to the wildfires, and then let's go to the hurricanes, and let's go to this, and let's go to the, you know, Trump's tear gassing peaceful protesters, and you're watching it all, and it's like you said, you know, like you, if you have any empath in you, it breaks you. And then it's like, oh, let's go sit down for dinner now. Right. Like I'm supposed to sit down for dinner and then get ready for bed. And it's like the end of my day is just like, oh, every, you know, it just like totally guts you.
Yeah. What do you think you're going to dream about now? Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's like, oh, where's that Xanax? Where's that booze? Yeah. Where's that whatever? Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm like, everybody that's around me, they know I'm like, turn that shit off.
Yeah,
yeah, totally. Okay,
I watch basketball.
Yeah.
Sometimes
this guy. I told my brother this, and he loved it. He cracked up. There's this neighbor of mine who, like, you know, he tries to crowbar a political view into a conversation.
Yeah.
And he goes like, said, blah, blah, we're talking about whatever. And he goes, well, you know, they're going to be building some of these Pelosi palaces now. And you got to, and I'm like, bro, I watch cartoons and listen to the Grateful Dead.
Yeah.
That's what I said. I go, I don't know what you're talking about.
Nope.
I that's it. And he goes, all right, well, you know, you should probably pay attention. Cause I'm like, yeah, well, nice.
Yep, exactly.
So I could be in a good mood like you.
Yeah. Yep.
Not that we should be in denial, but at least tell me the truth, or at least balance it out with the other side of the coin.
Yeah, if you want to talk Rick and Morty, I'm all for it. Man, it was so great talking to you. Will you come back and hang with us again? This is awesome, man. It's so cool. It's such an awesome experience to hear someone's story that like of because quitting is always that thing that, you know, you can always just, it's always right there. And sometimes it takes going through the shit to look back and go, all right, I did it. And you did multiple times.
You have to, you just have to keep pushing forward, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep going.
Thank you so much for sharing those stories with the listeners. That's super important. Everyone that listens is always like, you guys somehow keep topping yourselves, and we did it again somehow. Those stories are just amazing. So thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Would you be able to tell all the listeners where they could find out if you guys are going to be in their area and where they can support you guys and all of that?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're on fucking stupid ass Facebook.
Yes. I wish that was the actual thing you had to type in.
You know what? I might change our
fucking stupid ass. Nth Power.com.
Nth Power. Just so everybody knows. Nth Power.
Facebook. No, we're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. I love Instagram.
Yeah. They're owned by Facebook. Owned by Facebook. Stupid ass Facebook, aren't they?
Not so fucking stupid ass Instagram.
Geez, yeah. But we have a website, probably the best way.
Cool.
www.thenthpowermusic.com. All of our dates are there, ticket links. I'm actually about to put up some merch. Cool. On there, because I know a lot of people want some merchandise, so we'll put it online so people can buy it online, because we live in an age of technology and you should be able to order some Nth Power merch if you want it.
I need a little
that's our secret. We're like, you have to come to a show to get it.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah. That's about it. I mean, when the album comes out, obviously it'll be on all platforms.
Nice.
Every platform you can think of.
And what is that date again?
September 29th.
Oh, you're in California for quite first. A bit.
Yeah.
I'm checking out your
our schedule.
Goddamn fucking website right now.
Yeah, right.
Well, we love you.
Yeah, thank you so
I'm
much.
So glad you came too. On. And be safe. Tell Nate and Nick that, you know,
yes.
How much I love them.
Yes, I sure. will. I and, will.
We'll
please
be
give
rapping.
Nigel our love and Jess, please.
I'm going to buy a little Nigel-sized Nth Power shirt.
Yeah.
It says, have stitched my first concert on it. In New Orleans.
Stay safe out on the road and keep saving lives, huh?
Thank you. Mama. We will love try you. Our best.
Thank you.
Bless you, Mama. Love you.
Osiris.